Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance whenever we're able. We do routines to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off to mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Awing, 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 awing
something happening here. But what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our sides. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Children, what's that sound?
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. Is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. Grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. Came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures
memories of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hello everybody, you're listening to the Knights of the Round Table, I believe number 124. Hey, right in time.
Gotta add him. I didn't know.
All right, well, you guys are live, you know.
Oh, good morning.
So
what's the subject matter for today?
I don't know. You guys broke my brain.
Who did?
Y'all did. You called right in the middle of me getting ready to talk.
You said 8 minutes, counting down.
Oh, well, I said 8 minutes of tunes left. I was giving you time to call in before, like, I started talking and all.
Oh.
Anyway. I heard the last part of your show there, buddy. Had me depressed, brother.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't get much chance. I didn't get a chance to really start my show because I was figuring other things out. I think you know the background to that. But
yeah.
Maybe I'll get to do that all the way through and make a little more sense.
I got to turn this heater off over here. I'm about to blaze.
A little bit of moisture in the house kind of helps the heat stay a little more level. Or the feeling of being warm or cold instead of part of you cold and part of you hot.
Well, you know, if we had that global warming going on, then I wouldn't have to worry about this whole heater situation. But either way, that's neither here nor there. It just, I don't know, it seems to me like this whole world is battle-weary, man. I'm tired of hearing all the doom and gloom in the world, and I'm tired of all the... I just don't know whether or not... I don't know. Can we fix this world or not? I just don't know, man.
It's going to be a big job.
I got all these plans in my head, all these designs for machinery, you know, generators and such, and I just can't, I'm not a fabricator. I'm a designer. I can design it in my head. I can draw it out to some extent on a computer. Write down how it's supposed to function and all that kind of stuff. But when I go to put it together, all I have to work with is junk, you know? Like, things that I've salvaged.
You know, speaking of junk, I actually have a call out that for something I'm looking for that would be considered junk. If anybody happens to run across one, let me know. I'll do whatever I have to get you whatever you're needing for it, but You guys know what an overhead projector is. The old school, you put a sheet of plastic on it, you take a black marker, and you draw stuff on it, and it shoots
them
all. Well, they made, before they really got into making video projectors, they used to make these LCD screens. It's like your panel that you have in front of your desktop to look at your computer, but there was no backing on it. It was just clear, and the light would shine through it, and you'd lay that on top of the overhead projector, and it would turn it into a video projector, right?
Right.
And what I'm needing, though, this is where the difficulty comes, is I'm wanting one of the earliest models where they didn't have the color LCD yet. I want the black and white. Monochrome, otherwise known as.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, Thomas, because when I worked for American Sheet Metal when I was really young, in Norfolk, Virginia, we had exactly what you're talking about, and it was on, it had two stainless steel rods that went up in the air, and you could turn a crank and run the camera up or down. You'd run it down, open it up, and we had these negatives of different size sheet metal fittings we would make, like square rounds, elbows, all kinds of stuff. And you put it in there and turn it on, and it would throw a shadow, like a white shadow, down on your metal, and you would crank, you would lay your tape measure down, and you could crank it up, and of course the further away you got, the larger it got, you wanted it the size you wanted. Then you would focus the lens where it, you know, focus in really sharp, and just your black magic marker, mark around it, and cut it out.
I was going to say, we did the same thing when I was down in Dallas. I worked for a billboard making company, and we just basically shined the outline of whatever it is that they were wanting. They'd build a billboard inside of a building and use the projector to shoot it up onto a wall, and then they put that had paper on it, and you run over the surface of that with a marker or whatever to trace it out onto it, and then they throw it onto a big steel sheet metal table. And then took a pen that was essentially just a metal electrode over the surface of that, and that would make an arc popping through the paper, making little pinhole marks. Then you hang it over the billboard and take this like powdered charcoal and rub over that, and it would poke through the dust would go through the holes, and then you'd be able to see where you were supposed to paint the lines to put the big words and whatnot on it.
Same thing we had. We just used a double ink pen. That's all. Mm-hmm. And we trace it out right on the metal. And again, being a projector like that, the further away it is, the larger your object is. So you just...
Right. Well, this is what I'm looking for it for, though. What you're talking about is making it bigger. I'm talking about making it smaller.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So
I
can shrink him with this down.
Yeah.
Two things happen whenever you shrink images down that are ran through something like that. One is the image gets smaller and a higher resolution, and that's more obvious, but the second less obvious is the light concentration gets greater per square inch.
Yeah.
Kind of like when you take a magnifying glass and, as a kid you're out burning holes in the lawn furniture or burning paper or whatever.
Well, I don't think
that's
going to do
those,
that.
Can you use a mirror that's got the... it's got the reflective surface on the facing side of the glass, and one of them lenses from projector televisions.
Well, that's not what I'm needing. Is I need the way to put the image through it, but it needs to be completely non-colored, meaning it doesn't restrict colors it passes through. Whatever I shine on through the backside of that color will go straight through it.
But you definitely want it by quite absolutely no color, correct?
Right, exactly.
Would you do that?
Well, I kind of want to keep that under my hat right now.
Green screen.
So, it's important. It's extraordinarily important. But,
So you need your physical picture of light in black and white.
Well, yeah, I just need... It's not the black and white part. As a whole, it's the white part. I need the white part to be in the background because the white means there's no color.
Can somebody grab
clear.
Devlin?
Sure.
If you get a color LCD screen, essentially there is no white in that. It's all covered with little tiny bits of red, green, and blue. So any light you shine through it, even though if you have the thing completely empty and it looks like it's white when it hits the wall, it's actually putting red, green, and blue light on the wall and mixing it together.
Okay, how does a digital camera, you can set them for black and white, how do they work? Would that help you at all?
No. That would work maybe for getting the images that I want to go through this thing, but I need something that actually is just black and white. I'm not looking to shine white light through it, actually.
Well, I'll keep my eyes peeled out for you.
Well, I was going to say, I'm looking to shine specific frequencies of light. Like, I would literally be able to make a giant, open-faced CO2 laser, like, tank, and set it on the backside of that with a big collimating lens, or collimating mirror system, so that I could shine a really large, but low-powered CO2 laser through it, and then shrink it down so that it would cut that pattern into something.
Are you trying to do this with moving objects or stationary objects?
The object itself is going to be stationary, but the area that it's going to be hitting is going to be in motion.
Do you have a model number or anything of the such that we can paste in the chat room of the radio show?
I haven't found a whole lot, but I know the really old manufacturers, before they were making color ones, they were making black and white ones. There's very few that made only color. They didn't get into it before the monochrome had been phased out. Yeah, I mean, my other option is literally I'm going to have to find a black and white monochrome LCD screen from like one of the old laptops and then strip the backing off of it and coat the front so it gets rid of the anti-glare coating. It smooths it out. So
I've got an old monochrome flat screen, but I don't know anything about it, whether it works or not.
Flat screen? It's it's not a CRT. It's an actual LCD.
I'm not sure. It's definitely a flat screen. I'll have to send you a photo of it, but it's probably like for one of the old style terminals or something.
Right. Well, I was going to say, there's converters out there. If I get one that's, even if it runs off a 910, I can find a VGA converter to slap on it. That way I can hook it up to a normal computer and run images through it.
This is old enough, it probably is VGA.
Right.
Can't you just disconnect the other colors from the LCD?
Well, if I'm using a color screen, then it's still going to be shoving black and white through red, green, and blue. And if I shine a light through it like that CO2 laser, the infrared, it'll block it all. Nothing will come through.
Right, okay.
So, and I don't know of any way that I can remove the color, because everything that I've looked at in the standard LCD screens, the color is actually embedded into the glass that's on the inside where the liquid crystal display is at. So if I could find one that it was on the back side and find something that can dissolve it to get rid of it and make it all clear, then that would work. But I haven't found anything like that yet, so.
Well, later on after the show, I'll go out and take a look at it. Maybe I can get a picture of it somehow and send it over to you or something.
Okay.
Those that are listening that understand what he's talking about, post it in the chat on the radio, chat, and we can come back and look at it later. Need be and catch up with it. Thank you very much.
Anyway, back to the fabrication portion of it. Every time I try to make like a pulley or something, there's just some sort of just minor wobble in it that, you know, whenever you're trying to spin a flywheel or something like that and it vibrates off the table or whatever, or slings the magnets clear across the room. I remember Tesseract did a video like that. About died laughing. He made a flywheel, but he didn't have his magnet sperm on
him. You put some magnets on something and flew off a wheel off the table.
Yeah, anyway, it's just, you know, there's a lot of precision tools out there that most average Joes with their shop don't have access to. I got a drill press and stuff like that, but even some of the drill presses that you get, they don't really necessarily give you a really precision drill hole, you know, straight up and down and all that kind of stuff. There's all kinds of fabrication issues when you're trying to build something that needs to be precision. You know, the less wobble, the better, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, if we had the right team in the right shop and everything to troubleshoot some ideas, that I believe we could have already had an alternative energy device fully functional, proven out there to the world. But as it stands, when you're digging through the dump or the junkyard to get parts and you got to wait around to see if you can find another part, it's like that Beckett oil burner igniter that I used for my plasma experiments. I found one in a thrift store for $30, and so I bought it. Well, it's a 20 kilovolt oil burner igniter that runs off of 12 volts. And you can go out and buy them. They're like $85 to buy them new. But to find them used in a flea market is like, you know, treasure hunting. Like winning the lottery or something.
Yeah, like looking for gold laying in, you know, I don't know. What, just think of a place that basically isn't very gold rich, and you go out there looking for gold in the stones and whatnot, and chasing around every glint that you see shining off of broken sandstone and stuff.
Yeah, but
you find nothing, but you get lots of promises, but no delivery.
You could have all the best ideas in the world, but if you can't find the doggone parts, or you know, even salvage stainless steel or whatever off of other things, you know, repurposing. I've repurposed more junk in the history of my mad science lab than probably 50-60% of all the average people out there. I like, you know, if somebody throws a computer on the side of the road or something like that, you'll see some wild-haired, mad science guy running over there to grab it, you know. But, you know, I'm just saying, I would love to speed this process up somehow and build some of these ideas. I watched some of these guys out there. Lid Motor just did a copy of RimStar.org's super efficient motor, and when I look at that thing, I'm just saying, you know, there's so much potential with that one specific design, and it falls in line with a lot of things that I was thinking about a long time ago. You know, I don't know, I threw the video up in there in the chat room, so you have to scroll back in there, but that little motor that he's got, he's running it off of next to nothing, and if you combine that with a static motor that would send a charge across to a capacitor bank, I'm almost positive you could get that thing to run itself because of how efficient it is. But you can't have any wobbles in there, you know what I mean? Or do you have?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, you're not going to get rid of all wobbles, no matter what you do, because material is made basically out of little bubbles.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
But with them, if you have some better equipment, that's for sure. You just need to get yourself a lathe, or get somebody that has a lathe that, you know, the two of you can afford shipping and whatnot, you know.
Within reasonable range.
Well, right now I'm in a situation that I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to solve the issue, but I'm trying to cut a spiral into a cone so I can lay a wire into that and it not slide off the cone in the other direction. And it's proving to be a little more difficult than I thought it would initially. So, if anyone's familiar with Tesla's Spirit Radio, then they know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, right, that's what I'm trying to do, is make one that the coil is actually laid in like it's supposed to, because everything that I've seen, they just basically wind it on there until it piles up and pushes up the coil, or up the cone, and back down it. So it's not really an actual conical coil, because it's running up and down in a bundle. It's more like a bundle that's kind of shaped in a cone shape. So you get basically coils that are smaller when they're supposed to be getting bigger, and then, you know, other coils are bigger than when they should be smaller along the path. So, you know, I'm almost there, I think, but, you know, it would help if I had a better lathe, you know. So we all have the woes. There's always a piece of technology or a tool that we really should have that we don't have at the moment.
Well, I don't mean for it to sound like woes, and I'm not asking anybody for anything, but I just, that's why I get frustrated, because I see the technology that's out here.
No, hold on. You are asking for something. You just need to be clear, because I'm sure somebody can give it to you. I mean, you're asking basically for help. That's what I'm gathering. You've been asking for help making some stuff. You're not asking for their tools. You just, you know, pitch down in 20, 30 minutes and help you out, and then send a part to you, which, you know,
yeah, that would be cool.
We have offered, but we haven't been able to get our heads together to do what we're going to do.
If we could get if we could get a doggone team together, I'm telling you that just the team we got right now, we got enough information that we've researched to literally build a working device. And I'm saying, you know, if you take just the Bedini motor by itself, you know, it's got some really good concepts, and the Pulse motor by itself, it's got some really good concepts, static motors, ionosphere motors, plasma technology, the Van de Graaff, the Wimshurst, all these different things by themselves have a lot of good ideas, a lot of good concepts. But I'm saying not putting your eggs all in one basket and combining all this knowledge that we already know and building something that we know will work.
Right, so basically something that can print electronic components like positive and negative junctions and print out three-dimensional glass objects would actually be pretty useful, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. If we could actually just print the parts. Now, I've watched these guys with these 3D printers do some pretty amazing things. Matter of fact, the one video that I talked about from RimStar.org, he had a 3D printer that he printed out that motor that he did and wound his own coils and all that kind of stuff. And if you actually look at the work that he did, I mean, it looks good. It looks like professional, done in a factory kind of work. You wouldn't know any difference if you bought it somewhere that somebody made it in their house.
You're not talking about that green motor, are you?
Yeah, I think it's green.
Okay. I guess we have different opinions on what professional in a factory looks like.
All right,
that looks like it was
to me,
with a rep wrap. It works. It works well.
Let's just say, to me, it looks better than what I would have fabricated in my mad science lab, because I...
So, but yeah, what you're saying is if you had his access to his tools or whatnot, or his help with making some parts, you think you could probably make some serious headway.
Oh, yeah. Even if I could get him to manufacture it as I told him, how I see it in my head. Like, if you look at that, I just scrolled up in the chat room over at Shazoo's Mad Science, Shazoo's Radio, in the chat room. I just scrolled up and looked at his picture because you said it was green. It is kind of green. But if you took and looked at that thing and you thought about it, what if you had a Wimshurst design connected with that? See, right now that thing runs on super low voltage. It's a pulse motor and it runs on super low voltage. And if you could put a couple discs like the Wimshurst design on there to build up a static charge and shoot that off to the side to a capacitor bank, and then have a transistor at the right time discharge that capacitor bank back into the power supply, charging that power supply back up, you would make it, at the very least, a little more efficient than what it already is, and it's already pretty doggone efficient. The guy, yeah, Lidmotor, he made one. He said it ran for like a hour or two off of just one dead battery that, you know, just barely had any juice in it. It ran for that long, and to me that tells me it's pretty doggone efficient. So,
right,
you're not going to, by using the Van de Graaff or the Wimshurst style disc on there, you're not going to get any back EMF that would cause that system to drag down. There wouldn't be enough resistance with that static charging system than it would be as if you had, like, put a generator head on there. You know what I'm saying? Once you put a load on that generator, it's going to bog down. But this isn't going to be, it's not going to be a load per se, because you're going to build up a static charge, shoot across to a spark gap into a capacitor bank, and you're going to be charging that capacitor. The only load that would come after that would be you sending that energy over to your battery bank that you're trying to charge back up. You see where I'm coming from? No? Anyway, I see it in my head. If I could explain to him, draw some diagrams out to him, and he could manufacture it, you know, I wouldn't even care if he stole the idea and ran off and sold it to the world and made $1 billion. I wouldn't care, just as long as that idea went out of my head into his machine and got actually built, and I could see it function one time, I'd be the happiest camper on the planet.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Look at how the Wimshurst generator works. Everybody knows how the Wimshurst generator works, right?
Yes, I do. It talks about charging up the little plates and then they get closer together because they're passing each other, and then they that's when the static's put on. Then as they separate from each other, the voltage goes up. They collect that voltage and send it back down to the capacitors, as we call it, or latent jar. Yeah. And then as they get closer to the other one, to the next set, it's after so many turns, it's basically so many of these plates pass each other, and then they put the charge over to that again, and then as it separates, as they separate farther away, the voltage goes up again.
Well, when it's jumping across that spark gap and charging up those Leyden jar capacitors, that's thousands of volts. That's not just a couple volts. If it's jumping an inch or 2 or 3 inches across a huge spark gap, that's a lot of voltage going on. And up until that point, you really couldn't do no physical work with it. Well, maybe you could. There's certain things you could do with it, but...
You mean you couldn't do any physical work with it with the way things are built to do physical work today, because they're all designed to work off 120 or 220 volts with, alternating current. When you're working with higher voltage and lower amperage, then, you got to build your equipment completely differently.
The key is... once you get it into that capacitor, now you got power. Now you got something you can actually do physical work. They use capacitors for a whole lot of stuff, starting up motors that are usually hard start motors, electric motors. You can't just plug certain motors in under a load and then expect that motor to take off. They use that capacitor to charge up and have an extra punch before that thing gets going. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, if you understand how the Wimshurst works, the static charge or whatever, it doesn't take a lot of torque to turn those discs around. All you got to do is get them to spin, and they'll build up that static charge. The same could apply with the Van de Graaff, and you could actually take the Van de Graaff idea and combine it with the Wimshurst to build up an even better charge. Just by the materials that you make, make this thing out of the belt drive and everything like that will build up a better static charge. And so it's my belief that if you got this motor right here and it has enough power to turn a Wimshurst, that you could charge that thing up fast enough that where it would dump that energy back into the power supply. And since that thing is so efficient that it doesn't take that much energy to keep it going,
Well, that would be my question, is how much torque is in it? Because if you add something like the Wimshurst unit on it, you're adding weight to it. So you are adding more resistance to it. You're also adding air resistance too. So does it have enough torque to overcome that to spin it fast enough to get some electrical charge? And is it enough that it would build up to be able to actually continue feeding itself?
Well, mathematically, I would say I'm probably getting beat up already. But I still believe that it's possible to do it. I mean, there's ways to cut down the resistance enough, even if you had to put the entire unit into a vacuum and cut down as much possible resistance as you can to get this thing to be as efficient as possible. And using plasma technology, you could get this thing to do some pretty incredible things.
Hmm. That's something I was thinking about. I don't know if you recall my design that basically turns DC or turns static electricity into DC pulses. But the way that works is basically it's allowing the unit to fill up with static until it. The plates can make connection and discharge one through toward the ground. You could set up any number of those between, your air collection to get your static from the air and your discharge into the ground, which means you can run that in between each of those through a different coil each time. And if you're running it through a coil, then you're basically running a charge potentially through a transformer. So you could, set it up with 1,000 of these things and take advantage of that static that you're pulling out of the atmosphere 1,000 different times before you finally let it go into the earth.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I just say we should be so much further along than what we are right now.
I don't, especially since that device I just described doesn't require massive mechanical skills. Making an electroscope is actually a fairly simple device, and that's the most complex component out of it. Everything else is just wrapping coils around ferrous components and pounding a pipe or something into the ground to create a ground.
You know, I don't know a whole lot about electronics, but that's probably why I get this idea that you, Thomas, and you, Shaziz, are talking about the exact same thing. I mean, right down to the letter.
Well, I think we are to some extent. It's just a design difference that we're talking about.
Right. Well, he's talking about generating electricity to run something. I'm talking about the ability to basically just pull it from the atmosphere, no matter where you are. And actually, you pull it, run it through a system that makes it powerful enough to make it useful.
Well, and that's what the atmospheric group does. They got the 200-foot poles up in the air, and they got the...
And all they've got, though, is they've got a pulse of... a single pulse as it jumps across a spark gap of high voltage.
Yeah.
The electric jar doesn't require that high of a voltage. All it requires is an electron buildup on those plates to cause the plates to repel away from each other.
Yeah.
When they repel away from each other because they're made of metal, the grounded plate that's hanging in there beside them, when it touches them, allows them to pass through from those plates into the grounded plate and pass on through the coil that it, the wire that it's attached to. And basically move on its merry way, headed toward ground where it wants to be. And that can be ran when it goes through there, through a coil, you know, to a wire that's going through a primary coil on a transformer. You can then, at the other end, have another one of these jars that has discharging into a recently grounded plate. It now fills up and it starts expanding away from each other until it touches the next grounded plate to move on to the next coil. So you just keep repeating this as many times as you want and are willing to build the components before you finally... The last one has to be attached to a copper rod or something pounded into the ground.
Yeah.
That creates your ground. So that way it's always headed toward that. It's trying to get to that. But on the way, you're getting to force that pulse of electricity to run through a coil. And if you run it from one jar, okay, once it discharges across that gap and it's on its way to the next jar, it runs through a primary coil... And then have that run through toward another jar instead of going to ground. And in between jar two and three, it runs through another coil that's coiled the opposite direction.
Okay,
it's in the same transformer. So now you have two pulses. One went one way, then the other went the other way. And the secondary coil is going to pick up both of those one after the other because you're not working with a pulse generator alone. You're working with a pulse generator that each pulse generator is also a capacitor, so there's a delay in between each one.
So how would you get it to go into a battery instead of the ground, the dirt?
Well, I'm not talking about running it into a battery. I'm talking about just running into the ground, but as it's on its way, you're generating electricity off a secondary coil that can then be ran through, say, a bridge rectifier and then forced into a battery. So you could discharge 1,000 volts through this system. And as it goes through those coils, you're basically running it through a step-down transformer that turns that 1,000 volts into 12 volts. The secondary electromagnetic coupling is creating an energy field. So you're generating electricity off of the electricity as it's on its way there.
Pulsating DC will work in a transformer.
Right. But now imagine pulsating DC that each pulse that it does is going the opposite direction from the previous one.
Oh, so let me get this straight. So you put a pulse through the transformer, and then the flashback has a diode on it, so it'll take on one of the coils to sit there and take that and store that into the battery.
What
else am I missing here?
Okay, well, the thing that everyone is missing is that when you run AC from your wall into your transformer for your electronics, it never goes into your electronic device itself. It itself is never powering your equipment. What it's doing is it's creating a movement of electrons in a secondary coil, and you're using the electron movement from the secondary coil to power your electronics. And what I'm proposing is to replace the AC power from the mains that comes into your house with static electricity that's being ran through a pulsation system, and each unit it does a pulse with this charge as it moves through the system, is moving it through a coil that's going the opposite direction from the previous one. So you want your first coil, okay, you've got your wire that's coming in from the atmosphere, and it's carrying an electrical discharge from the atmosphere, right?
and it causes those two little plates to expand because they keep filling up with electrons, and those two plates become like charges, so they repel away from each other. Next to one of those plates is a grounded plate that runs to a wire that goes around a coil inside of a transformer, okay? And at the other end of that coil is another jar waiting to charge up, okay? So your power goes through that, it goes through the coil, but the first coil is wrapped around that. Just imagine you only have one bar of ferrous material, okay? And you wrap that coil around it going from left to right. Then it goes to the next jar, which then discharges, say, through a second coil of wire that leads to a ground. We'll just do a simple system, a two-stage system. You got two jars. It goes from jar
pretty much it's in theory so far off the side that ground.
Right, exactly. So it keeps moving its way towards ground, but when it goes in between the jars, it's going through a coil that the first coil is going from left to right, and then the second coil is going from right to left. It's going backwards before it gets to the second jar, and then the second jar, when the grounding plate in that is attached to the ground, so it discharges off into the ground. So you've just taken electricity out of the air, you ran it into the plates charge, and the charge builds up until it touches and discharges and grounds out, and when it discharges, it runs through the first coil going from left to right. Then it goes to another jar, which charges up, and once it charges up enough, it touches and discharges, then it goes through that coil going from right to left.
I understand what you're saying.
To the ground. And then
here's the system.
Left, right.
It collects electricity, comes down to the two plates of a capacitor that will separate. One side has a ground. Right.
They're able to
ground, but it doesn't go straight to ground. It goes through the coil.
Right.
Then it goes basically to a latent jar, and the other side of it goes to ground. And
No.
Okay, so it goes from that coil to ground.
Right. The next collection point is the next electroscope, meaning that the plates hanging in there that start building up a charge and pushing away from each other.
Okay.
Okay. So you always have more charge at the beginning of the system pushing the other charges on through, and when they discharge, they're reaching zero.
It's a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
And you can do this anywhere. And
you're gonna get AC from static by charging the same charge, but if it goes through the coil a second,
right,
the other direction.
Well, if you want to get more efficient, you don't have to stop with the second one. You can set up 100 of these jars, as long as each one of them is connected on down the line, headed toward that ground, because the electrons are not going to stop flowing until they hit the earth.
Right.
Or vice versa, whichever direction it's going from, they're not going to stop until they reach their final destination. And each time they're making a jump from point A to point B because of the plate that's hanging onto it and then eventually discharging it, they're doing more work.
And it should get stronger and stronger as it goes through.
Even if it gets weaker and weaker, as long as you're pulling something off of it each time, instead of, you know, it just not doing any work at all, just being static in the atmosphere.
And then you got to take your a secondary to drop the voltage to bring amps in.
Right. If you're using it, whatever you're using it on, you can wrap the secondary coil on each of those stages to that degree. So if you want to step it down, you use a lot thicker and less coil, a less amount of coils versus the primary's initial whole lot of little tiny wire coils. If you're wanting to step it up, you go the other direction. You run it through, you know, essentially the equivalent of like a coiled plate that has like real fine filament for the secondary wrapped around that, and run that, you know, 2,000-3,000 volts up to a couple million volts.
Yeah. So you could take one of them Mylar helium balloons, send that up to collect your static, and pretty much run a lot of things with it.
Right. From the potential that we've seen with Robert Smith's swag generator plates being used as radiant energy collectors, you wouldn't even need to do that. You could potentially just set that out on the top of your house and have enough of these jars and enough coils and whatnot in order to basically convert that into the DC power we were talking about to run an inverter in the house.
Sweet.
That turns it into DC, pumps it into a battery, and then you drain the battery as needed. Always have a constant source of power coming into it, feeding and filling up that battery. So that battery could be nothing more than basically a graphene capacitor. Long lifespan. One unit. I mean, wires and
metal plates with like a hinge hanging them together will last a really long time through millions of cycles. You know? So you're talking about something you could probably build in a week or so as an individual sitting at home if you have the wherewithal and you don't have anything cutting back on your spare time, like maybe, you know, two kids and full-time job. And I mean, I know friends who basically don't even have time to basically stop and use the bathroom properly. So you couldn't be one of those people. You'd have to have some, you know, some free time on the weekends or whatever. But you could build one of these fairly quickly, and then, you know, maybe a week or two of tweaking if it didn't come with a formulaic design that somebody else put out on YouTube and said this is exactly how you do it. If so, then one weekend and you should be powering your house for the next 50 years off of, you know, stuff that basically can be bought off of the typical shelf.
It would be easy enough to test. I still have Cultus's Vandegraaff generator over here. I could make some jars like you're talking about and try to discharge them into capacitor banks, so it'd be easy enough to test.
I would say, word of warning, I tried a plastic jar and I got zero results, so I don't think the plastic works. I think it's got its own static charge holding, so you want to try to use something that's glass, I think.
Well, I think old mason jars would probably be just fine.
Yeah, I took 1 gallon of dill pickle jars. They're in glass, some of them.
Well, you wouldn't, that's just it. You don't even need something that big.
Really?
As long as it's glass. And it won't restrict those little plates. The advanced version the last one that I put up, essentially has two metal plates hanging down, and one of them has a hinge on one side of it where a really, like, really, really thin metal plate, like aluminum foil, is hanging off of that side.
But
it's attached to that plate. That way, only one side pushes away, so you get double the distance for push.
I've also got a negative ion generator, a little 9-volt version of it.
Hmm?
That would probably work sufficient enough to test it. But either way, the whole key of all this stuff is that all the technology's there. I'm just saying, if we get everybody in the shop for a holiday or something, and just start building. That's it. Just get there and do it. That's all I see that's necessary, because my fabrication skills stink, you know. I can make things out of junk and they'll function to some extent, but they're not going to function as well as they could. Like that motor that I keep talking about that RimStar.org did, is that thing, it to me looks fabulous, you know. I mean,
Yeah, it's a great thing. It's just the technology he's using, everybody keeps touting as being manufacturing grade. It's not.
Well,
and that technology needs a boost. It needs more work. And that's, you know, part of the reason I want this LCD screen is it ties into my home-built 3D printing technology that will actually rival the stuff that's made in large manufacturing facilities like, say, Sony or any of the places where they make iPhones. They will give the home user the ability to make stuff like that at home. You won't have to go to Walmart and buy an iPhone again.
I think I got where you're coming from. Yeah, I need to keep my mouth shut.
Yeah.
Anyway, his manufacturing skills rival mine. They're better, way better. All right, I can put it together. I can make it work, but it's not working as efficient. And I watched both of these videos, not just the one he did, but the one Lid Motor did. This design right here, and it has the coils going in opposite directions, and this thing is just so super efficient. And I'm a firm believer that a good idea could be expanded onto to a great idea. And what I see in that little design that he's got right there is a good idea. It could be so much better. You know, he says in his description of the video, it's not perpetual motion, even though it kind of looks like it could be. But I see that, you know, as efficient as that thing is, it wouldn't take much to maintain it, such as an onboard Vandegraaff or Wimshurst that would build up a static charge and put some juice back into that system, making it yet even more efficient. Now, whether you could get it to 100% efficiency, you know, I believe it's possible. But, you know, I'm not a mathematician either. So all I got in my head to work with is seeing the mechanical. I can see the mechanics of it working.
Well, I would say mathematics and physical science rarely line up, simply because the mathematics we work with are incomplete, whereas the universe is unforgiving. If you forget a component in your equation, it doesn't care. It's still going to do what it's going to do. It's going to use it while you haven't, so...
Well,
I would rely on the mathematics. Let's work on getting it built and give it a test.
If it works.
Let the mathematicians explain it later with the math afterwards.
Yeah, I did something yesterday with a couple magnets that I was checking out. I had a capacitor hooked to an LED, and I charged it up with a 9-volt battery. And it'd stay lit for a little bit, but either way, while that thing was charged up and still lit, I hooked it to a regular neodymium magnet and it instantaneously shorted out. However, I took and hooked it to a ceramic magnet and it still stayed lit. It didn't short it out. And so I'm thinking that you could almost take in the same flywheel that you're using, which it looks to me like he's using some sort of ceramic style magnet on the thing. You could actually put portion of the Van de Graaff, one of the wheels at least, of the Van de Graaff, because they both have to be spinning in opposite directions. And so you could take one of them and incorporate the plates on one of them and take away from, you know, having to have more parts to the system. You understand what I'm trying to say here?
Yep, I do.
Anyway, the least resistance you can get this thing down to, the best. I just say that when I watch these things like that, you know, I'm amazed by a lot of the different researchers out there. I watched Terry and Ryan do some amazing things with those Slayer exciters and stuff. And those, to some folks, don't seem like that big of a deal. Somebody got a bird.
I've got to turn that thing off one of these days. It only goes off for
an hour. Those two, some people don't seem like that big of a deal, but there's something going on there that I think could be expanded on. I mean, if you can get as much wireless out of, you know, just one little microchip, one little transistor, and some coils of wire... Imagine if you expanded on that thing. Instead of just one transistor, you had it dominoing, kind of like your static plates in your system that you were talking about.
You know, that's the whole thing. People make these little bitty things that do this, do that. Well, that's not enough. They say, that's not enough to do anything. But like Thomas said, just make 1,000 of them.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
there's always a way to compile what you've generated to make it into a larger mass.
And I guess that's the point.
There's actually a Depeche Mode song that says everything counts in large enough amounts.
It's like we were talking about yesterday, making the drinking bird. I mean, it is so simple to make one, and so inexpensive. You can build a 5 or 6 foot drinking bird for less than $25.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really, once you make one or two, and then start...
Those things essentially work off of heat absorption and dissipation, correct?
Exactly.
The bulb in the bottom heats up, and then it cools off, and then it heats up, and then it cools off, and the liquid that's in it expands and fills an area, and then it contracts and empties the area, causing it to tip back and forth. So if you slip away from the drinking bird concept and just strip that down to the nuts and bolts, it would be really easy to scale that up.
Oh, Lord, yes. I mean, that's exactly what I'm
ordering. Or better yet, don't even scale it up. Attach them across a network so that you've got them sitting on a spindle where it allows them to tip back and forth, but there's a spine sticking off the back that attaches them all together so when one tips, they all tip.
Exactly. And you wouldn't even have to have one. You can have them tipping at different deals, because each one would be pulling on the same shaft.
Mm-hmm.
One direction. So when it went one way, it's free.
So you're talking about the shaft that they're pulling on being attached with the ratchet and pawl system?
Yes, sir. Exactly.
Okay. That way you can continuously spin it one direction.
You don't have to do all that fancy timing, you know, as far as trying to get them all to go at the same time. Just go at their own rate. And next thing you know, you've got all kinds of daggone torque. I mean, like I said, you could really, truly, the material to build one 5 foot tall would probably cost, if you got your stuff from a junkyard, it probably cost you somewhere around $12 to $15. and would produce anywhere from 40 to 60 watts of electricity. That, those are figures I've got so far. So,
right. They traditionally work by basically being, at one point or another, they're dipped into a warm glass of water, right?
Cold.
Cold, okay. So the water is colder than the surrounding air.
But it doesn't even have to be colder. It can be the exact temperature of the colder air. The fact that it rocks back and forth causes the wind to go across it, causes it to evaporate, and in the evaporation, pulls the heat out of the head.
Okay, so you're working with the evaporative cooling.
Yes, water can be the exact same temperature as the surrounding ambient air, but the ambient air is what's the heat it is what's going into the bottom bowl, but and causing the pressure to build and push the liquid up. And it's pushing liquid up because as it rocks back and forth, the water in the felt evaporates and causes it to cool, and the vapors in the head condense, shrink, and allowing the fluid to come up. Then when it tips over a weight, it's off balance, it tips forward and touches the water again. And it is absolutely amazing how much little or how little water it actually takes to keep one of these things running. A 5 foot one wouldn't even use a quart of water a day. And I'm talking a 24 hour day because they will run 24 hours a day. They will run in a dark sealed room because of the way it works. And there's other fluids that will work in one. You can use propane, you could use alcohol, you could to get more power, you could actually use a combination of alcohol and water, because water is almost double the weight of alcohol, and it mixes. Acetone will mix with water. It's even better than alcohol, because the late peat of acetone is only 220 BTU. The late peat of alcohol is 460. The late peat of water is 860. So if you used alcohol or acetone mixed with water, you would have the weight of the water to give you your power. You would have the minimal latent heat of the alcohol or the acetone to actually vaporize with less heat, actual heat volume, and create the pressure to push the water and the alcohol up, or the acetone. And that's all you want, is that little bit of pressure to push it up. Now, it takes one PSI to push water to be high. So if you had, for example, a six foot bird, essentially your pivot point would be at 3 feet. So all you'd have to do is build 1.5 PSI pressure in the bottom to push the water all the way up to the top. So it's amazing. The beautiful part, like I said, is they work day or night, sunshine or not. They'll work, depending on the fluid and its freezing temperature, there's almost no limit to how long it'll work. Because even in the wintertime, for example, if you used propane, well, you're dipping water into the head. I'm sorry, the head's going to freeze up, ice over. Well, good. Really good. I mean, don't worry, man. It would work. It would work in a snowstorm. I think they're amazing. That you're not going to get a lot of power out of one, but it's so simple and so inexpensive to build one. You could build 100 of them in 2 weeks' time.
See, there's a lot of brilliance in that whole plan there. I'm just saying, man. Man, if I could only get everybody in one spot one time. Just get us all in a shop, sit there, troubleshoot things. I mean, while I'm sitting there working on a device or something like that, one of you guys' eyes would catch something that needed to be addressed in the meantime. We could solve the problems as we went. And I seriously believe that we've already got enough information right now to literally build a device.
I think this is an idea about the wind burst and the that other dealing. I think it's a great idea. Somebody just needs to jump on it and do it.
Well, I kind of put the bug in Lid Motor's ear, because he also makes these little static pill bottle generators that he runs little static motors off of. And the whole idea is to get work out of it. And so with that said, he's getting work out of his little static generator slash electric motor, static motor on the opposite side. He makes these things real small out of pill bottles. And so it doesn't take a lot to get those things turning. It don't require a lot of torque to do so. And I think that motor that rimstar.org and Lid Motor duplicated, I think that thing has more than enough torque with the energy that it takes to get that thing going to run one of those little pill bottle generators.
Right.
And so if the bug I put in his ear, if he actually tries it and it works, then that would be wonderful, because there's proof of concept right there. I think that the Wimshurst design is such a simple solution. You know, when we talk about back EMF, I've been saying this all along, you know, when you got your generator's running, whether it be off of gas or whatever, when you're running your generator, it'll run perfectly smooth until you put it under a load, and then those electrons make the path all the way back into the coil that's actually trying to generate at the same time and starts opposing it, you know, creating a braking effect. And they call it back EMF. I call it something like a secondary magnetic field that's being created while you turn that light bulb on and those electrons make the path back in. But what I'm talking about doing is not allowing the electrons to have an opportunity to make it back in long enough to create back EMF by separating that with a spark gap. So you'd have a split second in between each one of the pulses before the energy made it back to the other side. Wouldn't be enough time for it to build up a strong enough field to slow that thing down, if you understand what I'm trying to tell you. So you got the Van de Graaff spinning around, it's building up a static charge, it's shooting across the spark gap, which is charging up a capacitor, and I know this is possible because I've done it for the last 3-4 years in my lab alone with using Tesla coils and stuff like that. If you go back and look at some of my Shaziz coil videos where I talk about, there's like 4 separate spark gaps on this thing. And you can actually tune these, time these things out, and it sounds like popcorn popping back and forth. Every time one of those capacitors gets fully charged up, it discharges back onto the deck of the coil and sends more energy back into this. So the longer you run the doggone thing, the stronger it gets. But instead of sending it backwards that way, you got it under a load on the opposite side, so only charge you got is the charge going into the capacitor and not the capacitor fully charging up and discharging back the other direction. You're actually using the load, which would be where all your current watts and amps would come into play then, because now you're draining off the capacitor. And you can use a capacitor for a battery. I mean, people do it all the time. They're in the little shake-up flashlights. You shake the magnet in and out of the coil. It charges up a capacitor. And it also has a couple rechargeable batteries in there as well. The capacitor and the batteries complement each other. And you got that flashlight.
Actually, it depends. I've seen some that have no rechargeable batteries, just a capacitor, and they still work
really
good. It's an amazing concept. Stinky flashlight,
like a honey
apple. But either, well, say that Electro-Man thing you were talking about, I thought of that ages ago, to be mounted on boots or something, so that when you walk, they're, every time you step down, they're generating a charge to run like LEDs inside the boots or something.
Yeah.
That way, walking around.
Yeah, me and Booker were designing over a year ago.
Yeah, I was back before 2000.
But get you a huge capacitor. Get you like one of them capacitors like the I see it was showing my video. It's 800 microfarad Mallory capacitor. I can't remember how many volts it is, but they use them in like amplifiers, like bass amps and stuff. They're a big old round, looks like a Coke can almost. But put you an LED across that thing. Charge it up with a battery and watch how long it takes to drain that down using just that LED alone. So you can use them as batteries. It's already proven technology.
You know, I would say my idea was basically for LEDs built into the boots that are charged off of your movement. That way you can use it for spelunking.
Yeah.
The idea of the shaky flashlight is exactly the concept of producing electricity with cold steam by cold steam turbine. You use the cold steam to push water, and then water pushes the magnet and makes it bounce up and down and through a coil. I mean, that's how simple the cold steam turbine is.
Well, and there's so many different possibilities in there. You can combine all these technologies together, man. There's so many different possibilities in there. When you talk about things like the Stirling motor and the shake-up flashlight, there's ways by which you could combine the two of them.
You know, something simple as that little toy pop-pop boat.
Yeah.
If you didn't move, it would push the water. And if you had a paddle down in front of it, it would push the paddle. And if the paddle was pivoted in the center, the other end would move, and you could put a magnet on that. I mean, there's so many, many simple ways to do this. It's pathetic.
That's the problem, is there are all these ways, but there's no way to get everyone together at this point being seriously discussed. I think that's the thing that, like Shaziz and I have been saying for a while, we need to keep pounding on that until we get that problem solved. Because once we get the group of us together, whether we're doing it through webcams and the mail, sending materials back and forth to each other, or we're literally, as he was talking about, you know, everybody plans their vacation so that we can be together in the same building underneath the same warehouse roof for 2 weeks. Like a convention that lasts for 2 weeks, but it's at a warehouse, so we can actually work on stuff and build stuff, as well as our, you know, sitting around discussing and whatnot.
Yeah, I agree.
The idea of having a compound where you've got a bunch of apartment buildings and a big warehouse attached to it, that every year we all go there and get together and, you know, have a big bash out, you know.
Yes,
all the research that we've gathered up thus far, and the research that we'll gather by the time it's all said and done, man, I've heard so many different ideas come into play that could be, you know, already expanded on to the extreme. I can see it working in my head already. It just, right. You know, and these solar panel technologies are getting incredible. I took some little panels out of these doggone yard charging systems, and they work underneath the regular light in your house. You know, I've had a lot of solar panels before, and you could shine a little light on there and get a little bit of voltage, but nowhere near what these things are capable of nowadays. I mean, these things are incredible. And so...
Yeah. They keep getting thinner and thinner, too, because it costs so much energy to make that initial wafer.
Yeah.
So the thinner you slice it, the less energy per cell you're putting into it, and the thickness of the cell doesn't really matter. If you had a single layer of silicon and boron with a secondary layer with silicon and phosphorus on it, that would be enough to generate the exact same amount of power as every single cell you've ever seen. Even if you had one that was a foot thick that had that layer, because the top layer of phosphorus is basically just burned into the silicon and then doped into it. It's not actually a big thick layer. And it wouldn't work very well if it were a big thick layer. But the bottom layer only has to be as thick as the top layer. That's it. So you could literally have something so thin that if you picked it up, it would be like picking up a piece of silk. It would just drape over your fingers because its bend ratio, if you've noticed, when you grab a big pane of glass, it flexes. The thickness determines how much it can flex before it breaks. So it would be so thin, it would literally, the flexing of it bending over your finger as you drape it over your finger would be still less.
You're right.
Right, so, you know, you could have almost unbreakable solar cells that the only way to break them would be to grab them and pull on them to snap them. And glass loves being stretched and compressed. It's really tough at that.
It's your fiberglass bat insulation. It is glass, but it's so small, so fine, you can bend it all up and it doesn't break. But the way to make that is to squirt it out into the air and hit it with superheating heated steam and keep the steam on it. But colder and colder steam until it finally cools down and solidifies, and it makes pliable.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
I've been trying to figure out how to make a nanoparticle silicon dioxide. I was initially thinking dissolved glass and sodium silicate, or sodium hydroxide to make sodium silicate, and then acidify that, and then while it's still gel and it's still liquid before it's turned into silica gel, take and run that through a blender and just blend it until it's as fine of a gel floating around in that solution, and then dry it out really fast. But your idea actually works a whole lot better than trying to dry out a container with that stuff sitting in it still. And with enough pressure, since it's a gelatin, but after it's initially turned back into silica gel, because it's still a gelatin-like substance before the initial dry, it could be forced through that system you were just talking about into the air to make the at least, you know, a gel-like fiber that's nano-sized in diameter.
Right.
And then you just run it through a mill and grind it up after it dries.
Right.
Crunch it all up.
Exactly.
What about really high RP? You know how they make, candy? Cotton candy.
Cotton candy, yes.
And throwing it through a lot of heat with all that extra RPM and centrifugal force, how thin could you make it? Even if you add some heat in the air.
I'm wondering how that would work if you were spraying sodium silicate into the air that's dissolved in water, and you had an acid evaporated into the air.
What temperature did that melt at, Thomas?
Which is that?
The stuff you want to melt and spray into the air. What temperature are you talking about?
Well, you're not talking about melting. You're talking about dissolving it. So it's the temperature of water. Basically, you take sodium silicate and drop it in water. It dissolves in water the way salt dissolves in water.
In other words, it would work in a cotton candy machine.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That's fantastic.
That's why I said, when it's still sodium silicate, the minute you introduce an acid to it to turn it into silicon dioxide, or basically the most rudimentary glass you can think of, it turns into a gelatin-like substance. It's a jello out of a mold. And when the water dries out of it, that's where you get those hard nodules that you see in the little silica gel packets that they put in stuff to keep it dry.
Well, I wonder if it would do for a woman's perfume spray bottle. If you fasten the nozzle of the perfume sprayer to your container, and then took something that's non-combustible like argon or carbon dioxide gas, use it as your pressure on your liquid to squirt it out into the air. That's the idea.
Completely contained environment, though?
Well, that's what I'm thinking, is it would need to be in a contained environment that can handle acid. Because you would also vaporize, like, hydrochloric acid or, you know, chlorine gas into the air.
Yeah, you made it in a glass jar, would stick to the jar.
Right, you put the chlorine gas in, you have it basically being generated into a container, so that it's full of chlorine gas, and then you have a mister on the side of that spraying that the silica gel or sodium silicate that's basically dissolved in water and the water into that air, and the water would actually combine with the chlorine making hydrochloric acid, which would then acidify and attach to the sodium that's in the sodium silicate, neutralizing it, making salt, and leaving behind the silicon dioxide to just turn into a mist of quartz. You'd have basically little tiny microscopic beads of quartz.
So how do you separate the byproducts?
I'm stainless steel or Teflon. So why couldn't you make your container out of stainless steel and have it Teflon coated on the inside?
I imagine you could. I mean, I think actually anything that will withstand the chlorine gas would work. And the chlorine gas is going to be the easiest way to put it. It's also the highest acidic value. So it has the fastest reaction rate to the sodium that's in the sodium silicate to extract it out of the sodium silicate, leaving behind the sodium silicon dioxide.
So therefore, it wouldn't be sticking to anything. It'd probably just fall off as a powder.
Yeah, it'd just fall off. You basically, like I said, when you get done, you would have nothing more than basically... either you would have some unspent sodium silicate, so the sodium would still be unreactive, so you wouldn't have to worry about your sodium hydroxide forming and burning into the glass, if you use glass, or anything else for that matter, and the chlorine, that is, it would all be reactive until there's basically nothing, and it's not reactive to glass. Anything that it's not reactive to would be useful for that. So, you know, if you end up with an imbalance of either one, of sodium or chlorine, the sodium is already protected because it's with the silicon.
So your byproduct would be hydrochloric acid.
No, your byproduct when all finished and done, if you got a completely balanced reaction, would be salt and silicon dioxide, so a quartz micro beads of quartz crystal the size of basically like maybe four or five atoms clustered together.
So this hydrochloric acid is broken down during the process?
The chlorine that would make the hydrochloric acid reacts to the sodium and combines with that to make sodium sodium chloride.
Right.
Table salt.
Okay. All right.
Which that's where you get your chlorine gas initially. You dissolve salt in water, and then you run an electrical charge into that from a battery from two electrodes. You don't touch the leads and let the electricity pass through the liquid, and it will crack the salt. And the chlorine, because it's a gas, will evaporate off of it, and the sodium will sink down into the water and basically just dissolve into the water to make sodium hydroxide. A low concentration at that. So, I mean, even glass, it won't etch very well, but it will make sodium hydroxide and leave the chlorine gas to evaporate off of it into that tank.
Good.
So you take the sodium hydroxide and dissolve glass with it, and then, you know, run that through your sprayer and recombine it, and you end up getting your salt back.
My point is, you're getting useful byproducts. You're not creating something that's going to harm the environment. Your byproduct is a sellable product, even in the manufacture of your end product that you're looking for.
So the chlorine gas doesn't get wasted and put into the atmosphere.
So
right.
Well, there's one other advantage to this whole process too, and that's that sodium sodium chloride, the salt, is dissolvable in water. It's readily absorbable in water, whereas the silicon dioxide, once it becomes dried after that initial drying, is now quartz powder, so it's essentially sand. It's just like a even finer than flour sand particle. So it's not dissolvable in water any more than basically the sand you see on the beach.
Right.
So you could run water through that and then just run it through a filter to pull all the water out, and it'll pull all the salt with it, leaving just the pure flour grade quartz crystal to work with. And I'm sure there's probably uses that could be used for, like, making concrete that has a consistency that looks like plaster Paris, yet it's still just as hard as the concrete you drive down the road on.
That'd be sweet.
Yes, it would.
The untapped brilliance of the people of this world, man, it just drives me nuts. Man, I'm telling you, we should be so much further advanced as a society. I'm sickened by the whole deal, because I know that free energy exists, and when I talk about free energy, it makes people mad because there's no such thing as free energy. Well, once again, when's the last time you got a bill from the sun or the wind or the earth, for that matter?
They do in Florida. They charge you for having a solar panel.
Yeah, I also saw an article about how they want to make it illegal to live off the grid. So the guys like us would be criminals, because we're talking about, you know, telling people about solar panels and generators and such like that. Well, I guess
it already is in Florida.
I guess
we're getting off into political land. I only have one word for that.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying. I'm frustrated.
Atlas Shrugged knows exactly.
I'm just frustrated. I'm frustrated.
I do
because
got a question. This very fine quartz, is it round? What's it look like in the microwave? Is it round? Is it still crystalline form? Or
We wouldn't know. It depends on the size of the particle, for one thing. The particles, if they're big enough, they're not just a few atoms stuck together.
Yep,
they're probably going to form little beads, because that's what liquids do in the air, is they form a bead as they're falling. Like, everybody thinks
that'd make it break.
Everyone thinks that water, when it's falling from the sky, is a teardrop shape, but it's not. It's a sphere as it falls.
Yeah.
When it free falls, that's why the Earth is round, because it's free falling through space.
Natural
form, because of gravity being equal pull, is to form a round object.
Right.
Thomas, I think what Scott was trying to ask is, quartz is a type of crystalline type substance, and crystals, when they're naturally formed, all materials that are crystals have, each one has its own independent shape, a natural shape.
It's over a certain size.
Yeah.
So many of them clustered together.
This fine round bead would be much thinner and probably reflect a lot more light as a reflector. You know, like they paint the yellow stripe on the road, and then you put these glass beads on it.
Right. Oh, yeah, you're right there. You're probably looking at something that would be highly reflective and highly refractive, too.
So yeah, it's less material.
It would probably have a much more diffused light, like look at it and you shine a light at it from all different directions.
Well, I'm also curious to wonder whether or not this would have any piezoelectric to this this specific crystal, whether or not it could be utilized in a crystal battery type setup.
It sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think round doesn't bend very well.
No, it doesn't.
Either way, you know, tools, technology, if we can bring them all together, we can actually make some doggone working devices. I mean, I'm going to keep making what I'm making with whatever I got to work with. I'm not going to stop doing that. I'm just saying I just get frustrated because if I get a brilliant idea, then I got to go searching, you know, looking for parts and materials, and sometimes that gets put on the back burner, and then... You know, I don't want these ideas to go by the wayside, so I'm trying to give all these ideas away as fast as I can, so hopefully somebody else will take and run with it.
I bet you could grow crystals out of something that would find much quicker.
Yeah.
You'd have more water action going up against it as it's being heated. The trick they use for basically growing crystals is they usually put it inside of a sealed container so that the liquid that's in there can't evaporate. And then they heat that liquid up because it's in a compressed environment. You still have liquid water hitting like 1,000, 2,000 degrees. And at that point, it dissolves things like aluminum oxide or silicon dioxide. And if you have a long chamber so that one end of it, the water is not 1,000 degrees, it's only like 200 or 300 degrees, and it's at the top end, and basically the material inside of the water that has dissolved that rises to the top, and it deposits when it cools off. It dissolved because it's no longer hot enough to hold it. It's a crystal and whatever it's releasing it from.
That's
so you'd either have it growing all over the inside of the chamber, or if you have something hanging down in there, growing on whatever's hanging down in there until you end up with like, you're using the aluminum oxide, you end up with like a completely pure, clear sapphire that grows off of it.
It
is actually doable, and it's very simple to do exactly what you just said.
Yep, it's called hydrothermal synthesis.
Very doable.
You can look it up. And this is the thing, is they actually have different terms for it, but the process can be done with any soluble substance and any solvent. So you could do... The same thing as what's called hydrothermal synthesis with alcohol. Just replace the water in the chamber with alcohol, and now you have something that you can superheat so that it will dissolve things that normally would not be soluble in it, and have a long chamber so that at one end the alcohol is cooler than it is on the end that's dissolving the material, so that it deposits it on the other end to grow a crystal out of it.
Yes.
Would it be cool to grow a perfect crystal, single crystal?
Oh, they do it all. They do it all the time.
Really?
It's not a giant crystal, though, because the chambers have to be fairly large. So, like, you know, it would cost a couple $1,000s in scrapper prices. You know, if you're working in the industry, you're talking millions of dollars. But us working on it, if we get together as a collective for a couple $1,000s, we could build a chamber that we could probably grow sapphire crystals that were one single crystal, perfect, pure crystals the size of your fist.
Wow.
Then you slice that up and you grow whatever you want on that for like making LEDs and all sorts of other stuff. It's also good for making glass that has a lot higher strength than your standard glass that you see being used. So like, you know, the heads-up displays and the cockpits and stuff like that for fighter jets, that's usually what they use.
Man, as I'm sitting here listening to that, I'm thinking about all this stuff that needs to be recycled around the globe, man. There's tons and tons of glass and plastic that could be used to make a lot of what we're talking about. It's mind-boggling, well, man. There's so much...
When I was talking about that LCD screen that I need,
yeah,
there's a side of that that involves all of that recycling side you're talking about. Being able to basically take scrap copper and doing nothing more than dropping it into a vat.
Well, and would there be something
then,
written...
Then extracting it out of the other end and printing out solid, hard copper objects.
Will there be something written on the side of this screen that would give me an indication whether or not it was LCD or not?
Oh, you won't have a problem knowing whether it's LCD or not. It's going to be really thin. If it's not an LCD screen, it'll be really fat because it's a big tube behind it, and there's an electron gun inside there with a vacuum.
Well, this is a flat screen that I'm talking about. It's like an old computer monitor terminal, and I'm almost positive that it's monochrome.
Right. So the question is, though, how thick is it? From when you're looking at it, you're sitting down in front of the computer, right? And you reach over the top of it and put your hand down and touch the back end of it. How deep is it?
It's probably maximum an inch and a half thick.
Then that's an LCD screen. It can't be anything else. So the only other thing it could be would be plasma. And I know for a fact I've never seen a plasma screen.
It's old, it's dusty, and I haven't even tried to see if it even works. But if I can get it to you, you can have it if you want it. I'll have to send a picture and let you see what it looks like to see if it's even something you're talking about. But as far as computer monitors, it's an oldie but goodie. It's probably not as old as the old big old giant monochrome screens that you're talking about with the tubes in them. But
right.
Anyway, it's sitting in my shed.
If anybody out there, though, runs across one of those projections, overhead projector LCD screens, and it's monochrome, let me know. Because that will require no work. All I have to do is just make sure that I've got it working and throw it on the device that I'm putting it onto and wire it up to the computer and go. But, I mean, if I've got to take something like what you're sending and tear the reflective material off the back and take the little lights and stuff off it, that's fine, too. Whatever I got to do to get the ball rolling. The beauty of this, if I get one, I'm fairly certain with about 6 months worth of research, I should be able to make more. I won't have to buy any more at that point. I can just make them.
All right. Well, what do you guys say we take a coffee break, get a 10-minute song break there, and get some coffee and such?
Excellent. Okay.
Sounds great.
Well, I'm going to throw a couple tunes in there. So stay tuned. You're listening to Knights of the Round Table.
Night. And in the colors of a thousand sunsets. They travel through the world on a silvery light. The people of the earth stood waiting, watching as the ships came one by one. Setting fire to the sky as they landed, carrying to the world children of the sun. Children of the sun. All at once came a sound from inside. There beam of light hit the ground. Thank you.
everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Got to keep old Thomas Anderson in check over there. Ouch, quit it, ouch, quit it, ouch, quit it. If Pete and Repeat were on a boat and Pete fell out, who'd be left, Thomas?
Are we there yet?
Well, I'm glad you have lots of enthusiasm for the Knights of the Round Table and helping all our people out there with a lot of ideas and stuff. And I hope that all the people out there actually take these ideas and run with them. You know, this is the whole thing about it. You know, when we're sharing all this research and knowledge with everybody, we're not in it to get rich. If so, we failed miserably. But we're trying to make a difference in the world, if that's even possible, or we're at least giving it a shot. And one of those things to giving it a shot is the reason why I do my mad science, is because I don't like the idea of the people being underneath the thumb of the power companies and so on and so forth. Besides that fact that there are people in different countries that could use some electricity for heating and lighting and cooking and stuff like that, if there was a plausible device that could definitely be proven and built and shipped around the world to supplement. We've already got solar panel technology that is mind-boggling, and it's getting better by the day. We talked about methods by which you could actually build your own solar panel. But either way, those things should be already in the hands of people all over this planet. They should be at least something better than nothing for those individuals to either charge some batteries up and run a fan or run some water pumps that will pump water up to them, you know. If of all the technologies...
Run a refrigeration unit so they don't have to worry about getting sick off the food that they've got stored away, or having to, you know, keep animals so close to them that they're basically being... getting sick from, you know, the waste products and whatnot coming from them.
Yeah, and there's
a little separation. That's the whole point of, you know, modern civilization. And what makes humans last longer now is by living separate from the other things that basically would make us sick, but that we still require for our existence.
Well, see, even in what you said right there about the animals living closely, in close proximity and making people sick, you know, there are means by which you could actually have a self-contained a waste treatment product that, like, let's say you got a pig farm, you know, and pig farms usually smell so bad that you don't want to drive within miles of them because that's how bad they smell. But if you had a self-cleaning system that would continuously rinse off the ground underneath where the pigs are doing their business or whatever, flush it down into a system to where you could actually start refining that into something like methane gas or whatever, in order to use that to generate electricity or whatever to actually run the system to begin with, that was...
Yeah, and then take the remainder of what's left, the solids, and throw it into the field to basically be used as fertilizer.
Yeah, well, either way, there are solutions to all these problems. And not only would that cut down on the smell, your local pig farm wouldn't give you brain damage while you're trying to drive down the road holding your nose. But, you know, either way, I don't know if any of y'all ever passed a pig farm before, but they're ripe. Anyway, besides besides all that, you'd be using what would normally be a waste product to, you know, refine into fuel. And it's not that...
It's useful, and at the same time sanitizing the area.
Exactly. And so not only would the animals be healthier because they wouldn't be walking around in their own waste, but you'd be healthy, you know, being in the general vicinity because it's being cleaned up, it's being recycled into fuel to burn or whatever, you know. There's so many different possibilities with all the technologies
and
that we have.
Without having to pump them full of chemicals that end up making super bugs.
Exactly.
That's what they do traditionally to keep them from getting sick from their own filth, is they pump them full of antibiotics.
She says, the amazing part of what you just said about taking animal feces, methane gas, in a controlled environment where you can actually take the methane gas and use it, the amazing part of this is it turns into methane gas whether you put it in a digester or not.
Yeah. And so the global warming guys ought to love that one because, you know, you're not going to be expelling it into the air. You're going to be putting it into a closed-loop system that you can then refine and use, you know?
Exactly. Like you could pressurize it and use it in the farm tractor and grow the more food for the pigs to eat.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, people. I mean, it's going to turn into methane gas whether you do it or not.
Yeah, exactly. That's why they tell you whenever you go into an outhouse, don't light up a smoke. You might be launched into the moon.
there's a point there. I mean, some people say, well, yeah, that's good. Now, I'd have to sit there and say it creates the same amount of methane gas, no matter how slow it turns into it. And if it's turning into methane gas slower, that means that there's more of it out there turning into methane gas, you still wind up with the same amount of methane gas overall the whole time.
While we're talking about poo, we might as well throw chicken poo in there too, because they've been using that to make fuel forever and a day, man.
Yeah, there's cars out there that run on chicken poo.
Cattle poo, horse, I'm not horse, but the cattle poo, chicken poo, and pig poo are the two, the three most abundant there are. In fact, the feedlots made an announcement back in the late 70s that, and they were complaining, people were going out about west of El Paso by the feedlots, and they were complaining about the odors, and one of the head honchos for the cattle feedlot industry said, well, you know, if you get right down to it, we could actually give 3 cubic yards of cow manure to every man, woman, and child in the United States for a Christmas present every year. Well, that's just the cattle. And that's just one big feedlot. Well, what about the pig farms and the chicken farms and the turkey farms? And turkeys get to be a big thing. I mean, after all, you talk about two-fold bacon.
Yeah, well, there you go, man. Like, if with all the technologies and all the knowledge we got, I've said this a million times. I'll probably say it another million times till I'm blue in the face and look like a Smurf. But if with all the technology that we got, there is no reason why we should even be talking about a so-called energy crisis, for one. There shouldn't be any people in this world doing without shelter, food, or clothes, because we have more than enough technology and more than enough. It all boils down to greed and power and corruption. And there you go. What's the solution to greed, power, and corruption? I would say stop buying from the guys that are trashing your cities and countries and waterways and nature or whatever. Stop buying from them. You give them money, you give them power, and that's as simple as that. And if you allow these so-called representatives to go around and do what it is they're doing, and you still want to give them a paycheck, burn your chicken poo, man. Burn your... Burn all! I mean, even water will burn. So if you got pluage water, turn it into hydrogen.
About a methane gas digester that in animal feces and turns it into methane gas, the byproduct is a beautiful, beautiful high nitrogen liquid fertilizer. Come on.
There you go.
Fertilizer easy because you're spreading the powdered fertilizer or granulated. You make money from your own fertilizer.
Well, there you go, man. I mean, it's like this. Some people say, you know, there's a phrase like diamond in the rough, or one man's junk is another man's treasure. There's poo laying all over this planet, so there's fuel laying all over this planet. I mean, for Pete's sake, what do you think oil was? I mean, it's a biological product, waste product.
Even all that grass you cut.
Yeah.
Go into a methane digester and do wonderful things.
So,
if you're fishing in a lake or a river or whatever where there's a lot of trees around, and as you're fishing, every once in a while you see these bubbles coming up. You know what that is? That's methane gas. The leaves and stuff fall in the water. They sink to the bottom because they get waterlogged. They rot and give off methane gas, and it bubbles.
You know, it's funny. It's funny that when I mentioned the doggone energy crisis, it just dawned on me. You know, people talk about growing corn for biofuel, and they talk about potentials of running out of oil and so on and so forth, which I don't think we'd ever run out of, but if we did, we did. So what? Who cares? You feed the cows corn, and the cows make fuel. You feed the pigs corn, and the pigs make fuel. There's fuel everywhere. You feed them fuel, it makes fuel. I mean, there's just fuel in all different directions. And you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see that. You see it all the day. You're going to stay with free energy. Yeah, well, what are you shoveling?
Yeah, that poo that you're throwing off in the ditch right there.
When you say there's no such thing as free energy, then you're shoveling BS.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking for it. You know, follow your local farmer's pig around for a while. He'll drop a bunch of free energy.
Yeah, see,
you got
to let them fall face first into it. They might be able to smell it.
Yeah. Well, you know, if they got tired of smelling it long enough, and then some guy would come along and say, "Hey, you hate that smell there, right?" "Yeah, I do hate that smell. I want to get them regulated out of business." Well, instead of regulating them out of business and not being able to have your BLT in the morning, why don't you just walk over there and say, "Hey, guy, there's a way you can make money off of that fuel there by refining it." You know what I'm saying?
You should ride by the farm and say, fresh air.
You know, some of your egg houses and chicken boiler houses actually pay money to have the chicken poop hauled away.
Well, and why don't they use the same system that I was talking about just a second ago? If you build it, it's like building a house, you know. Whatever you want in that house, you put it in before you finish the house. You know, you start from ground up. You think ahead of time. You make your house super efficient so that you got it insulated really well. You got your heating on the floor because heat rises. You got your cooling on the air because cold air falls. So you use common sense from start to finish. So if you're building your chicken coop or your pig pen, then figure out a way that even with the waste you can make money off of. Because if you can pressurize that methane into a tank and can do it safely and distribute it to other people who need to heat their house, you know, what's wrong with that?
You know, Sujita, I said it 3, 4, maybe 5 times yesterday on Bad Science. People, the truth and knowledge shall set you free.
Yeah.
I mean, even people aren't doing it because they don't think they can do it.
Well, you know, I think, I hate to say it, but there are a section of society who would rather just kind of sit around and wait for everybody else to cook breakfast and then enjoy in the spoils and not even offer to do the dishes. But, you know, if we're going to solve our problems in the world, first problem in the world is we got wars going on, all right? Well, the reason why there's wars going on is because somebody's not happy. They either don't like it because somebody has more money than them and more power than them, or they don't like it because somebody has more resources than them, so they're fighting over something, all right? It isn't like the Hatfields and McCoys or somebody just made somebody angry and they go out there and fight it out in the winter and then it's over. Now, this is a perpetual thing that has to do with energy, the so-called energy crisis. We got to save the planet, so we're going to put all these stiff regulations on you that's going to make people angry and want to fight you, and you got another war going on. Or my belief is not as good as your belief or whatever. You know, either way, if you want to solve the world's problems, the very first step you're going to have to do is stop the wars. And in order to stop the wars, you got to stop the need for them to have a war to begin with, like such as fighting over oil. What's the point of fighting over oil? When you got pig poo on your shit.
Back up a second, dude. It's not power that people are fighting over. They use that as an excuse to fight. Power is an energy. It's power over populace. It's, you know, economic.
Well, that's the power that I'm talking about.
Everything.
I'm not talking about electrical power. I'm talking about...
Okay, we need to drive the power that these people have away from them and into the populace, and if they find out you're doing that, you'll find yourself in the middle of the same type of war as the people over in Saudi Arabia and Iraq and Afghanistan are in.
You know what they say. Whenever they go and talk about running in there and doing something crazy, like a gang of kids or something like that. Well, you run in there, you all do something crazy, and then you scatter, and they can't get you all. See. And so somebody said there was like 8 billion people. I think Muddy said it on his show. There's like 8.
Listen, I'm not saying don't do it because they did resistance more often than you can imagine over people having equal rights based on skin color
Well, if everybody runs in there and does what we got to do and take the power away from the band.
I'm
going to take a step back. Basically, it's like a rich man living next to another rich man. Maybe they like living in that crowded, doggone city, and they only got a 20 by 5 foot lawn to mow. But one neighbor sees the other neighbor with a $3,200 zero turn, and the other neighbor sees it, so he goes and buys him a $4,000 zero turn. The next one buys a doggone brush hog, you know, just because they got to have better than the neighbor. It's a pride thing.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah.
Do you think it was a rich man or a poor man that came up with a tiny house idea? So, you got to reduce your carbon footprint. Hey, here's a bright idea. Let's make these tiny houses for you to live in so you can get cramped and have a Charlie horse in your leg every time you try to be comfortable in bed. Well,
I only know one rich man that lived in one, let's put it that way.
Okay, there you go.
The other people said, yeah, great idea. I don't have to spend all my money to live. I'm comfortable. I don't need it.
So, all the go-greeners.
Those whose treasures are the cheapest are the richest people.
So all the go-greeners have been sucked into the tiny house idea. I'll have a tiny house, I'll have a tiny footprint, carbon footprint, and I can save the planet. While meanwhile, back at the ranch, the rich, wealthy guy who does not have a Charlie horse in his leg because his house is more than 5 foot wide or whatever, then, you know, he has multiple bathrooms that he can choose from to utilize. And it doesn't matter how much waste he produces in his house because it's all going to go downhill next to the tiny house. Well, they'll refine it.
Jim, I don't have any idea if what I'm going to say has any bearing on this. But what you got talking about made me think of Crocodile. The first movie, Crocodile Dundee, when they brought him to New York City, and he looks around and he says, wow, New York has got to be the friendliest city in the world. Did you say that? He said, think about it. 8 million people and all of them wanting to live together.
They're probably mad because they have to be that close. But either way, the whole tiny house deal, the tiny apartments. Have you seen some of these government subsidized apartments these days? They're like the cracker box, you know. You fit everything all into one little tiny area. You can get more people into one building. That, to me, spells out disaster.
Next step would be putting bars on.
New button.
They have bars on.
They're not ready for that.
Well,
what are you talking about, Thomas?
I said new button. That's the German term for what you just what Shaziz just described. Those government buildings that they squeeze as many people into as they can.
Well, you know what?
There's a group, a musical group, that literally their name translates to destruction of those buildings.
Well, you know what, guys? I love y'all, but I don't want to live in a studio apartment cramped up with all you guys. We get on each other's nerves, even though we're friends. We probably wouldn't be friends by the time it's all said and done. Somebody gonna have some chili for dinner, and the ruckus will begin. So,
well, that's why I said to have a big warehouse working and have an apartment with every apartment in the building, and we all stay in our separate apartments whenever we're not working together. You know?
Yeah.
But
like
it's a vacation, so it's basically like a very large motel room whenever you go on vacation.
Yep.
You're not actually expecting to live there. You're just, you know, doing the requirements like showering, you know, the three S's, if you will.
Yeah.
You know? And then you go to, you know, hang out in the nice environment around it to relax and whatnot, and then you're ready to go to work in the building with each other.
Well, and you know,
that you won't have your own stalls too if you need to.
There is also a possibility for this deal as well. There's a lot of people out there that need to be employed, and there are ways by which we could actually manufacture sellable products if we had somebody within that realm who was a good salesman. I couldn't sell.
Well,
I couldn't sell nothing. I couldn't sell earmuffs to an Eskimo man.
You don't have. Hey, wait a minute. You don't have to sell something that people want. The product sells itself.
Well,
there you go. Okay, so think of it this way, okay? Because I said this before, and it is on my list of planned components to go into a research facility that's in the city. Okay, you get a building,
and you set up the equivalent of a hackerspace. So you have a welding stall, you have a soldering stall, you have a 3D printing system, you have some CNC mill equipment, you have grinders, buffers, you have, you know, assembly tables where people can sit down and work on things together. You have a high voltage chamber where basically all the high voltage experiments are done in. And then there's a big open area where most of the assembly and congregation goes on whenever you're wanting to sit down and talk about ideas and stuff with each other, that all those rooms that have the booths and stuff in them are locked down during the weekend, and you open that central area to the public. The people that run the place come in and have a flea market.
That sounds like a good idea. And also,
the flea market's not limited to setting up a stall to sell something.
You
set up a stall to describe something to general populace as they come by and give, you know, presentations and whatnot on what you're working on.
Yeah, it's a good idea. And to add to your list of tools that you were naming off about all the different machines is there's a lot of recycling machines, like in injection molding plants. They have regrinders that will regrind the used plastic, and that material could be used as well. You could do the same thing for glass or whatever.
Right. Again, the idea, though, is you have a list of tools that have their own separate little chambers, so you can close the door and lock it, and that way the public can come in, and if you've got a big glass window they can look in, that's great, because now they know what they're funding with the money they spend buying products there.
Cool.
They know for a fact the money is going to creating more stuff, and they get to actually become a part of it. It gives them a sense of camaraderie that you don't get walking around the standard flea market.
And to add to that is that there are average Joes out there with brilliant ideas who I would like to set up a booth with to say that, hey, you know, when somebody's got an idea, go over to that booth over there, the idea booth, you know, and we'll sit down and talk about it. Because, you know, a lot of people, they got brilliant ideas, and then they just go by the wayside, you know. Hey, you got this really good idea, and you tell all your friends about it, and then suddenly, bam, it's gone, you know. But here's a place where now you can not only give that idea to somebody, you could actually get it manufactured. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So I think it's a wonderful idea.
I think the analogy that could be used properly here is that a lot of people have these seeds, but they have nowhere to grow them.
Yeah.
And you want to provide them with some fertile ground to grow.
What's your idea, Thomas?
Thomas, I tell you what, come out here to West Texas and buy one of them buttes. Then you go ahead and you start down the bottom level of it, and you make all the rooms up inside it, grow your food up on top, solar panels on the side, and maybe a wind turbine up on top where you don't need very tall of a tower. And, you could even, have a few pipes, good fat pipes running down the side, painted black, and then covered with slide a bunch of 2 liters over it, and there you can have your hot water made right there, because it's insulated, and it's black, and it's collecting off the sun. Everything all right there, and an elevator to go up to each room inside. Just buy a butte. You don't need much land.
I like Thomas's idea.
Okay.
I like his idea.
I want you.
Where everybody go in, work on their projects, people and the public can come in, watch, and if they see something interesting, buy it. I would absolutely love to set up an assembly line and build a 5-foot ducky drinking bird thing and put a generator.
There's something to be said, too, about the camaraderie that comes from the collection and being able to, you know, meet up and be able to have discussions and, you know, socialize with people you don't normally socialize with on the weekend. That kind of raises the energy level in the people during the week while they're busy, you know, cranking away, working on whatever it is they're working on.
You know, it sounds like a stupid idea. There are people out there that would love to have a large front yard just as a novelty. But the thing is, you can sell one, make a profit, and at the same time, it would pay for itself over a period of time. They'd have this novelty, the notoriety of having it in their front yard, and it paid for itself.
Well, here's the other thing, too. They put something in their front yard that all their neighbors see, and they're just like, wow, where did you get that? Oh, down at the flea market. This guy's making them and selling them.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and if you made them look like, you actually look like a larger version of the small bird, You know, hey, nobody could complain about that being an eyesore in their yard if it was done right.
It'd be so simple to do. It's pathetic.
You could decorate that thing to look like almost anything you want. Talking about, what's the term, man? Oh, man, it's a specific type of kinetic art. You're talking about kinetic art?
Yeah, exactly. Kinetic art. You can make it look like a butterfly. You can make it look like a prey of madness. All kinds of,
on the back side of that thing that keeps flipping up and down into the air, just put some hinged wings made out of a really light material, so every time it pops up, it pushes the wings down, and whenever it goes back down, it causes them to flip up.
And those wings can be fast to the generator as well.
Yep. But you get the point. It certainly turns that two-dimensional, single, you know, position piece of artwork into a living organism now, as the people walk by and see it flapping its wings.
Yep.
So
it could be done. It'd be so simple, it's pathetic. And you can make all kinds of art designs. Like you said, art. And my art design people could put them in their front yard. They would be a novelty. Like you said, man, that is neat. Where did you get that? I want one. Well, you don't have to have one like mine. I mean, this guy at the flea market builds them and sells them. He does got all kinds of different designs. He might have something that you like better than us. And so they're going to go check it out.
Well, the best thing I like about this whole discussion that we're having here is the fact that it opens up creativity, because like you guys were talking about putting the wings on the deal to make it look like it's flying while it's sitting there. You know, opening their minds to creativity and getting people to actually doing, you know, something with their talents and skills, that's the best gold in this whole entire deal. Not only are you going to get some working products out of the deal, but you're going to get a lot of, you know, really brilliant minds to, you know, instead of, somebody said it a long time ago, brilliant mind's a terrible thing to waste or whatever.
Yeah, mind is a terrible thing.
Yeah, there you go. But, you know, I just like the idea.
I was going to say, are we going to go completely all the way around that and go, a mind is a terrible thing to taste?
Oh, my goodness. Hey, I got an idea that's been rolling around in my head. Now, we make a Wimshurst generator. At first, the voltage builds up slow. Then it starts growing rather an analog. It kind of grows logarithmically. Multiplies then multiplies, you know, each time that you spin the disc around. Here's the deal: when that static charge goes off, it goes pow, and it starts back down close to zero again. What if we put a 1 meg resistor? We make 2 latent jars for each side, and we put a 1 meg resistor or just some kind of resistance in between, so it doesn't drain the current or the voltage off completely. It would start to probably generate 4 or 5 times as much because the charge has already started to build up, and you've beaten the multiplication factor of the lower part.
Well, I'd like to throw something else into that mix. When that's discharging across that spark gap, it actually puts out an electromagnetic pulse that could be picked up as well.
Yep. One more thing, you can make it into mobile art. You can put the drinking bird over there powering the whatever the heck it is, that
Wimshurst.
Yeah.
And with on the side, some guy on a bicycle, and the wheel could be the front wheel of the bicycle, and he's pedaling like crazy, and the wheel turning, the bird's powering the wheel powering, and everything, and all, each one is making electricity.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden you've got a generator that doesn't just make electricity, it's mobile art sitting in your front yard.
And if you do like a Wimshurst deal and have the two plates side by side, it'll look like a bicycle wheel turning. You could do that as well.
That's what he said.
Oh, I thought he was talking about a regular generator.
It's ugly and nasty. It can look beautiful. It can be artwork and still serve a function other than just art to gaze at. I mean, man, these guys, the ideas are unreal. People out there that are listening to this show, there's some of you out there that got ideas that's unbelievable. If you don't want to be involved in the show, at least write something to Shaziz. Give him your ideas so that we can hash them over on the show. This is really great, fellas.
There's lots of ways to hide what you're doing. There's ham radio operators living in places where they're not allowed to have an antenna, but they go out there and get a flower pot and they make what is called a J-pole. And that's an all, pretty much an all-band radio antenna up to the length of whatever quarter wave you want for the lowest frequency. And each higher frequency that you want to go down, you put another J on it and then another J, and all the coax runs up the center pipe. So they got 80, not 80 meter, but like 40 meter, 20 meter, 15 meter, 11 meter, I'm 10 meter. And they go on up through the higher frequencies, and it kind of looks like a saguaro cactus when they're done. It's in a little flower pot out there looking like some kind of modern art, and nobody knows it's an antenna.
Well, there you go. And we solved a couple problems all in one go. You got your need met, and nobody got anything to complain about because it's not like an old toilet seat with a flower poking out of it in the middle of some homeowners association where they want all your houses to be the same color of gray or whatever. But there's just so much untapped potential out here in this world, so much brilliance that... if we could get something like this going and other people would duplicate it in their areas, you know, I'd like to see one of these in all states, you know, even in all nations, see one of these design centers put together that people could come together and, you know, if you needed a job, there's things in the manufacturing portion of it that, you know, you could have access to a job. You could build new industries, create new ideas. There'd be solutions there for people, you know, instead of wasting materials, like I said on the past show way back when, there's companies out there that will make products, and if the product is even remotely scratched, such as like an auto windshield, they'll throw them in the trash. Thousands of dollars worth of material and man hours going into the garbage because they can't sell it. And they don't want to sell it to somebody else who's going to recycle it and sell it to somebody else because they don't want to be undercut in their business. I can buy it cheaper if it's got a scratch on it from this guy, so I'm not going to buy it from the factory. So there's their deal right there. But either way...
Unless you're selling to some... See, actually, that's not entirely true. They do scratch and ding sales all the time.
Yeah, but what they can't sell...
The question is the thing that they're selling making them liable?
Yeah.
If it's not making them liable, then you will find them selling it at a reduced rate, but it's still way more expensive than they would get for it as scrap.
Yeah, I used to work for a glass company, and they called it blemished glass, and they would sell it to people who wanted to buy it. It only had maybe an inch or two scratch on it, and it was still a sturdy,
right,
safe product. However,
it's the mentality that gets them to do that. They look at everyone as classes of financial obtainment, right? So what they're doing when they sell something that's scratch and dent like that, they're essentially looking at the people that are not buying their product that's not scratch and dent because they can't afford it, and saying, how can we get those people to buy our product? How can we lower the price to get those people to buy from us as well? Hey, we have this stuff that's still usable, serviceable. We have tons of it that stacks up, and normally we're throwing it away. Why don't we reduce the price on that and sell it to those people, and then we can score more money from something that we wouldn't get any money from at all.
Well, and that's what I said to the company that I was working for at the time, that they ought to do that. And they was like, it was too much hassle for them, too much storage space, and so they just throw thousands of dollars worth of windshields into the trash. And
right.
Even though every year a new car comes out, there's still other older cars that are still on the roads that, you know, may need that windshield in order to pass inspection.
Back with truck driving down the road ends up ruining the windshield they've got, and they need enough. Yep.
But either way, my point is, if we had a place like this that we're talking about that we could build stuff, even the scrap products could be recycled and reused for some other product, and things that maybe scratch or dent or whatever, reduce price or whatever. Nothing would get wasted. If this was done the way that I'm talking about, nothing would get wasted. Everything would be used, and it would be done efficiently. So,
you know,
reminds
me of building those wind turbines out of 55-gallon oil drums.
Yep.
155-year-old here right now. Over 100. All they cost me was my time and gasoline to go get them and bring them home.
Yeah.
Then get them because they can't. Scrap yards will not take drums that are sealed. You have to cut them open. And it takes more energy to cut it open than you get for it because it's full of tip. Well, especially how it's flat being down as low as it is.
And then,
I mean,
That
sounds kind of ridiculous that they would say that, because they make big can openers for opening those things.
Yes, they do.
And the top completely off of them. You just stick it on there the way you put a can of peas on a can opener and turn the crank and it cuts the whole lid completely out.
But then there you go, guys. Listen, out of every single manufacturing process, out of every single manufacturing process out there and all the different industries, there's always some sort of waste product that could be, you could, if you was ingenuity enough, what's the word I'm looking for, to start a business, an entrepreneur, and wanted to start a business, you could go around to these factories. If you could find a use like he was talking about with all these drums that he gets, you could build wind turbines out of those things, or you don't even have to be wind turbines. There's so many different uses for reusing them, repurposing.
I like that. So
you can repurpose things. There shouldn't be any waste going on, period.
I talked to Scott several times about this Sabonis wind turbine. Now, I know Scott doesn't really like it because he's into propellers, but I like it. He's into speed, I'm into torque. And I've discussed this many times with Scott. What I want to do is, like you said, entrepreneur, I want to start a small business building these things in a plug-and-play type system. They'll be 18 to 24 feet tall. They'll produce anywhere from 800 to 1,000 watts in a 10 to 15 mile an hour wind. And they're plug-and-play. You pour the slab, you run your water out to it, and I bring it in with a trailer, set it up, bolt it down, and plug it in, and drive off, and you're producing electricity.
Well, and the only thing I keep saying about that is you need to run bearings between each set of barrels.
Yeah, that's fine too, but even that... If you incorporate my idea for using the high voltage from the start instead of going into the other deal, then now you've got one that even in the least amount of wind would be producing the massive amount of high voltage. Like incorporating that barrel idea with the Wimshurst idea, or even Muddy's propeller idea with the Wimshurst idea.
It would work great. The last Sabonis that I built and we tested, I would hold up my cigarette up, and the smoke was going on less than a 10 degree angle. That's how light the wind was. I held my wind meter up. I don't know the proper name for it, but it's a wind gauge. Shows you how fast the wind's going. The thing was reading 0.0. And this turbine was sitting there turning at about 15 RPM, 15 to 20 RPMs. I mean, yeah, come on. In an 8-mile-hour wind, if you try to stop it instantly, it will rip your arm off.
Well, I got an idea.
Hold on, Shaziz. Going back to your idea, the Wimshurst idea?
Yeah.
Okay. The Wimshurst doesn't generate electricity from spinning around.
It builds up a static charge.
No, not from the turning around, though. It builds up a static charge from the airflow that happens to be standing still while the wheel is spinning. If the airflow is moving, the wheel doesn't have to spin. It could be big, flat sheets.
So put it in a box.
Put it in a box with open sides, like basically stretching sheet out, across like a frame, and have a stack of those with air space in between each one of them, and then put that up in the air and let the air blow in between that, generate electricity. No moving parts.
Well, yeah, you're talking about a little bit different than that. You're talking a little bit different on that. The Wimshurst works on a variable capacitance and charging before it goes through that variable capacitance. Then as the capacitance changes, as the distance between the plates changes, it raises the voltage, collects it, and stores it.
Let's look at the physical design. The Wimshurst device is those two plates where you have two dissimilar materials taped to the two wheels and they spin past each other, but they never rub. They never touch.
Right. Correct? It's not taking the static from rubbing like the...
Right. Which the static from rubbing, though, is you can generate the same static by just pushing the two things together and pulling them apart. It's actually when you pull the two materials apart that generates the static.
Right.
What Thomas said earlier tells me what I've been wondering all this time, why do the two wheels both have to turn but in opposite directions? Why couldn't you just turn one wheel? What Thomas said makes sense now. If you turn both wheels, then the air doesn't actually travel. If you turn one wheel, just surface friction would cause the air to travel with it. But if you
that's like taking Lord Kelvin's device, where it drops water through two cans, and they're wired to opposite sides. The capacitance it charges the water on inside the can, but as it passes through and gets farther away from it, the charge increases, and then hits the barrel the bucket down below and charges the other can on the other side. Okay, it's pretty much about capacitance. It's not airflow on that.
Well, hold on. Let's go back to the Leemster's design. Okay. And the air inside, if you look at the air as if it were a solid block and not just being a bunch of little particles moving around, okay?
Right.
When you're spinning the two wheels in opposite directions from each other, what you're essentially doing is you're creating a tornado effect, and the air is doing the same thing that roller bearings would be doing if they were in between those two as the two wheels spin opposite directions. They would be revolving around. So they make contact with the one wheel, then contact with the other wheel, then contact with the original, then contact the secondary wheel again.
Right. And
you're creating little vortexes.
The charge is taken off the same plate of contact, and the negative charge is taken off.
Right. The reason why you're getting electrical discharge is because the air is touching the surface and then being pulled away from the surface. And then eventually it touches the other surface, and it gets pulled away from it. And one has a higher positive potential versus the other one having a higher negative potential. So one wants to give an electron away, the other one wants to receive the electron. So the air actually migrates across and deposits the electron that it picked up from touching the surface. So it's not really about capacitance so much as it is the electrical potential, the two components, and the air being able to be the carrier between the two.
Either way, it's a real simple concept, and I figured out a way that Muddy could market his wind turbines just by the way that somebody looks. If you go around and you see somebody who has hurricane hair, then ask them...
Like you?
Yeah. Do you live in a windy spot, my friend? I have just the machine for you. So, we got plenty of ideas. We got plenty of solutions, and I'd love to see all these come to fruition, if that's the right word. I'd like to see them all be made. And I'm just open for any ideas, how we could get this started, how we could get enough people on board to either start putting together the buildings such as what we're talking about, a meeting section, or anybody who would be interested in even remotely donating or funding. And I would rather have those who are involved with making stuff being the ones that do the funding. I would throw whatever pennies I had in the bucket to make it happen. Or
we can do a fundraiser campaign and give them a share of the business.
Well, whatever.
And if the business actually generates excess funds, they get a little kickback.
Well, whatever possible that's fair and has, I don't want anybody to be done wrong. I want everybody to be able to be confident in knowing that when we put all these brilliant minds together, we're gonna bring some products to the front, or even open up job opportunities.
Here's what I'm looking at, though. If you do the share thing, if you live nearby, you can take advantage of the share every day, because you're a member and you can come by and use it, meaning you're part owner of the place. So you get part access to it. But if you don't live nearby, there's still a potential from being a part owner to get something valuable out of it, whether it's just contacting the people there and say, hey, I'm part owner anyway, so can you guys help me out with making this part I need? And if it starts generating revenue, the company itself starts generating revenue from the people who are basically the owners that are working there and selling stuff and putting a little bit of money back into it, you can split that off and say, send, you know, 10% of the excess profit you make out to all the people who are shareholders, and put the other 90% into putting another facility together. And now you've got double potential, and the shares split. Now they have basically a share at ground zero, and they have a share at the new facility. Well, and they're getting, if there's profit coming from both of them, from selling at the flea markets and whatnot by the people who run the place, then they're getting a little cut off of that. Again, now they're getting 10% from two. In the meantime, this creates this system where these facilities for people to come and do experimentation and rent a spot. They pay like $5 or $10 a day to come in and just use the place however they need, right? Or like maybe $30 to $60 a month, and then they get to come in anytime they want as long as the place is open, which the way I would run it, it'd be open 24 hours a day. You come in whenever you've got free time.
Yep.
There's no limits. If you work late nights and you only have like really early in the morning to come by after work, we're there. You're not locked out, you know, but it creates a system where it becomes like a virus and spreads. Well, except instead of being detrimental destruction like the oil industry has done, becoming a cancer, this actually becomes a beneficial thing that spreads, you know, value everywhere.
Well, yeah, and it opens up a whole bunch of different markets in recycling. You know, a lot of people don't recycle because it isn't worth their effort. But if there was something that was going on like this, where there was actually products being made that could benefit somebody, you know, I don't see any reason why people wouldn't want to support recycling. If anything, you know, hey, give us all your glass bottles. We're making these out of it, or your plastic bottles. We're making that.
Yeah, there might be a potential with what we were talking about earlier for them to recycle their glass bottles, and we turn it into a nanoscopic-sized particle that's basically aerogel, meaning it's literally mostly air with just some silicon dioxide, so that if you throw that powder into a paint and paint it on a wall, you now have the same insulated value from like an eighth of an inch thick layer of paint that you would get from like half a foot of fiberglass insulation.
Well, if you get out there on YouTube and you look around, you will find hundreds, if not thousands, of home inventors that have tons and tons of ideas. Some ideas may not be as good as the others, but even in the bad ideas, I always find something in that bad idea that was worthy of expanding.
And usually it only goes so far because they're limited on their manufacturing capability.
Exactly. And so this kind of system right here would give other...
Yeah.
Like there's things... Thomas, there's things in chemistry that you just boggle my mind at how you can retain all this knowledge that I have no idea. But if I'm working on a project and you see that hey, you know, you could do this easier by using these two over here, then that's what I'm talking about. If you're bringing a combined amount of vast knowledge and research to the table in this particular style building that is community-based and community-supported. And so if there was ever to be a solution towards opening jobs and markets and things like that, how much better than you could get than put it in the hands of the people, the guys and gals out there on YouTube doing all these videos. You know, they're not getting rich off their videos, and they're
not. The other thing, too, is, like, let's say that we're making some sort of, like Robert Murray Smith was doing, we're making copper nanoparticles, right? If we start doing it on a small scale, knocking a little bit out, versus doing a larger scale because we have a facility with a group of people working with us, it's pretty much almost the same amount of effort that goes into doing the large quantity as doing the smaller quantity. So if you're not putting that much more effort into it, and you're going to end up with excess you can't use, you now have a product other people might need.
Yeah, and there you go,
and they can help support the facility by chucking a few dollars down to pick up some, you know, copper nanoparticles that they can then use to make ink that they can paint circuits with.
Thomas, I've got an idea, and it goes right along with what you were saying earlier, and it may be crazy, but I'm going to throw it at you, and just think about it. You start a company to produce electricity, to sell to the power grid, because there are people that cannot get off the power grid, no matter how much money they've got, their living situation, the town they live in, whatever, and they would like to cut their electric bill, okay? They donate money to this company to produce machines that will make electricity. The Their donation is not actually a donation. It's an investment that can never be returned, only shares in the profits. Then we find people that have the land and in the areas that could, but they don't have the money for the machine, solar panels, the wind turbines, the
right. It's not power to them. And they get the people who invested that can't connect to your system can get money from basically the people who can connect to it. Instead of those who can't connect to it still being tied to the grid. So you're taking money out of the pockets of the major power companies and putting it into the pockets of the people that are being siphoned from that can't get free.
Person that owns the land does not actually donate the land, but because of they're letting us use the land to put our machines on, the layback can buy their electricity from us for the exact same cost or price that the electrical company is paying us. We just have to produce more than they can use, so we sell the excess. And then here's the beautiful part about what I'm talking about. The people that invest, they per dollar, 50% of all the income, total income, is divided among those people on a percentage basis depending on what they've invested. The other 50%, you take 20% for overhead and research, and 30% is for growth. Now, the beautiful part about this is, say somebody invests $3,000 or $5,000, all right? You build up machines, okay, now from day one, they're going to get 50% of the production of that $5,000. Mm-hmm. Now, okay, so they instantly start getting the dividends paid quarterly. So every three months they get a check in the mail, but then the company itself has 30% to grow. So their money is actually growing. So every 6 months or so, their checks will increase.
Right, because you got more machines generating more power, collecting more money for more people.
Exactly.
And so what are their 50% that they're not getting is going back into the system to kind of grow the company.
See, creation.
Which they can do 100% too if they want to. They can say, no, don't send me any money. Put it back into the company. I'll start collecting dividends 2 years from now. Let's see what you guys have grown to by then, and then I'll collect my percentage then.
Residual income. A person that put $5,000 in it at the age of 35 or 40, heck, by the time they were 60, 65 years old, they'd probably get a check about 3 or 4 months for $1,000, $2,000. And the thing is, they could never get it back. It's not shares. They cannot sell the shares. They can only will them away.
Well, that's
how... Well, I would make it so that they can't sell it, because they're not getting their money back from the company. I just say they can't sell it back to the company. But then right. Shareholder changes, and then, you know, the person getting the dividends just changes hands.
Well, that's a real...
Right, so it's an investment just in shares alone.
My point is, who would want to sell it? Because it's going to grow.
Somebody desperate would sell it. Somebody else who's not desperate. That's what would happen. They want to. They'd be like basically cashing out an insurance policy early.
Exactly.
So there's still that entices people to invest that think, well, hey, what happens if like 5 years from now I need that $5,000 for dental insurance or something? I can still sell it to someone else, so it's still liquidable. So yeah, I'm more liable to put that $5,000 in there now and leave it there. And hopefully,
years later, sell, but you can only sell it for the $5,000.
Well, either way, it's all brilliant, guys, and we need to work out some sort of somebody who could put together a plan for a funding kind of deal like there. And I just want to make sure that if we do something like this on a mass scale, that people know ahead of time, you know, that they're. What we're talking about, that they're not going to get ripped off or anything like that. There's so many different things out there. People trying to get funding for everything under the sun.
Oh yeah, people are pushing almost hate thought out there that are getting thousands of people to fund their money.
But what we're talking about doing is a potential of helping people. If we're buying from the power grid or they're paying us for excess power that we're able to create. And then we take and funnel that money into the folks that can't afford to pay their light bill. We kind of help pitch in. We make a fund for help pitching in on their light bill that is actually going back to the power company. Then the power company hasn't lost nothing, and they got no grievance over us. You see what I'm saying? But either way, It puts something into the community that gives people with ideas options of a place to go to actually see these ideas be created and maybe even open a market for them. And they can patent their own ideas as they go or whatever, or open source them for sharing other ideas. You see what I'm saying? It's a brilliant plan, and I would love to see this happen. I don't have the whole organization skills enough to sit down and pen it out into a deal that I could tell people, you know, hey, donate to my business or whatever. You know, I don't have that. Mine's in mechanical, so if you guys need anything mechanical wise, you know, there's where my deal is. You know, I look at everything mechanically. And there's some folks out there who can run the numbers. There's some folks out there who know a lot about chemistry like Thomas. And there's other folks out there that have talents in all different directions. And so there would need to be somewhere, somehow, where we got a pool of people that we can, hey, there's a, I need some welding done. Who's the best welder in the crew? You know what I mean?
Do not fight the grid. If you're going to start a company to make electricity and try to make money doing it to help the investors make a profit on their investment, then don't fight the power grid. Work with them.
We're not talking about fighting.
Raymond, how about this? Instead of fighting them or working with them, how about we work outside them?
Well, that's the whole ultimate goal, is to become independent people independent. But what I'm saying is, in the process of us getting to the point, I know that energy's free. We all know it. I mean, a lot of people don't want to admit it. We're not looking for to get out more than we're putting in. All we're talking doing is tapping in peacefully with nature and working, you know, in harmony together.
And
getting things to function that we need. You want your fan to work, so you need power. Either way, there's ways by which we could do it without polluting the planet. There's ways without radiation and all that other jazz. We're just talking about bringing common sense and all the people together in a place to where if I got an idea, it can be done. It can be built. You know, those skills around in all different communities of people that, you know, brilliant. And some of them probably working at McDonald's or something and hate their job and would like to go work into a lab that would
love to be able to basically move somewhere where they could actually, there's a job waiting for them there.
Yeah.
Complete off-grid power system that's not connected to the national grid, so they're actually participating in maintaining that.
Nobody could complain about something like that. I mean, come on, there's a benefit. You're showing people how to take waste and turn it into something worthy. Something cut out real bad there. You guys are cutting each other out. All right, one at a time. You might have to renegotiate your call there, buddy, because you guys are cutting out real bad.
I'm not cutting out. I wasn't talking.
All right, there you go. We got one person.
Who was talking then? That sounded like you're... Okay, maybe it was Dublin was trying to talk, and it sounded a little bit like you, because it was literally like one-tenth of each word was coming through.
Yeah, it's like E-R-O-E-R-E-R.
Right. It was just a little tiny, barely even a consonant or vowel that was coming through, so...
All right, well, we're down to the last 9 minutes of the show there, so...
Still there, Mike? Is Raymond still there?
Raymond?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, yeah. Good.
And I'm still here.
Okay, so
I thought you said something about working independent of the grid.
That ties hand in hand with what I was saying about Carlton, in Carroll County. We set up a facility there that's not tied to the grid. You're outside of, you know, the grid almost already anyway.
But that goes,
you're just bringing your own power. If you set up your own power plant there, okay, that means that basically the advantage of moving there and buying land or buying a house or whatever in our township that we're building is that you can walk down the street and talk to the guy who owns the power company.
The thing is, my idea is I don't want to segregate myself away from society. I want to help. And I thought that's what we all wanted to do, is help the people around the world get a better life. So
except that you're facing all this opposition by pushing against them. If you're outside of their system, you're not pushing against them anymore. And all the benefit that you do can then be redirected to anyone you want to help at any point.
I understand what you're saying, but never mind. I think you've lost my point completely.
Boomer wants to make electricity and sell it to people for cheaper, and they can't afford it.
But you've got to start somewhere. So, I mean, if you've got the potential to do what you're wanting to do there, that's fine. I say run with it, you know. But if you don't, if you run all kinds of opposition, you know, legally, just, you know, step away from where they've got legal control and try to, you know, help people somewhere else. You know what I mean?
Every major law that goes through Congress is lobbied for.
Yep.
25 years ago, a law was passed, federal law, that if you produce more electricity than you need, you can put it into the grid, and the power company must pay you for it. They not only must pay you for it, they cannot pay you less than they pay anyone else. Now, the point is, it takes millions of dollars to pay lobbyists to lobby in Congress to get these laws passed. Who paid for all to get that law passed? Do you know, Thomas?
Huh?
I do. The power companies put together and they put up a lot of billions of dollars to get lobbyists to get this law passed. The power companies wanted this law passed.
Why are they resisting it now?
The very month. The month the law was passed, Texas, New Mexico Power and Light shut down 6 brand new power plants that they were building. They were hoping that individuals would buy solar panels, windmills, whatever. The power company cannot build power systems as fast as the population is growing and as fast as the demand for electricity is growing. Don't fight the power company. If you want to start an electrical company, don't fight them. Work with them. That way, if we can produce the electricity, that gives them more time to upgrade the grid.
Well, sounds great.
I'm scared to fight a bull, a pig. Feed the sucker, put him in the pen, and you got free bacon.
Yep, and fuel. So with that said, we're down to the last 6 minutes of the show. We need to make a quick run around the table, see if anybody got any last words.
Oh, I can't run. My table ain't round.
All right, who wants to go first?
Takes too damn tight to run to.
Last ideas, make them quick.
But, dude, that's what Raymond was saying. That my last idea on that is that that's why the initial idea was to set up these facilities in town.
Yeah.
You know, that way you're in a central hub where people who want to use it don't have to commute for, you know, hours and hours and hours out of state to get to it or wherever, you know.
Right.
Or way out in the country. They can just, you know, hop on a bus and ride over there and do what they're going to do and then hop on a bus to go home. They don't even have their own vehicle at that point, you know.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
A buck and a half and they're down. They're, you know, they're there to work on whatever it is, you know, until they're done doing whatever it is that they're wanting to do, and then they hop on a bus and go home.
Well, yeah.
But I still think that an outside community, a built community, would benefit us in the fact that we could show the populace how the government could be ran more efficiently.
Right.
And, you know, we basically take the world by storm with an idea. You show them the idea, and then they will propagate the idea forward. One man can't change the world.
All right. Well, that sounds
brilliant, guys. One really good idea, propagated from that one man to enough people, can change the entire world.
We're out of time.
This is just a platform, so.
Okay.
We're out of time, but this platform is a good stepping stone towards making our world a better place, and whoever's out there listening to all of us and our words of wisdom and wants to try to help out, then come to ShazizRadio.com or connect up with one of these guys out here, and let's get this ball rolling. So in the meantime, you've been listening to the Knights of Roundtable. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how do you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot.
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 It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
Red lights at the round table, green dots where we're able. We'll routine to call the scenes, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. Red lights at the round table, our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off to mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
On second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.